Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Today's episode is brought to you by Hack the Entrepreneur, the book, hack number 46, UGG Boots, an incredible vision. You don't climb straight from nothing to something big. You hit an obstacle, climb over it, and reach the next level of the plateau. You cross the line again, cross another obstacle, and climb to the next level again. The more you do that, the more you will look back and realize how far you've come. It's all about overcoming each obstacle as it hits and not giving up. Brian Smith, founder of UGG Boots. You can get that and 49 other brilliant hacks in my book, Hack the Entrepreneur, as well as the very best work that I have ever done in my life. Seriously, I poured my heart and soul into this one to help you do work that matters this year. Don't take my word for it. Seth Godin says about the book, "This book is filled with gems, with generous insights that can change the way you work. You can make something happen, and I hope you will." Grab a copy of Hack the Entrepreneur today, htebook.com, or go straight to Amazon and look for Hack the Entrepreneur.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today got his start as an engineer, became an author, startup advisor, and an entrepreneur. From 2005 to 2006, he was the VP of engineering at Odeo, who built and later spun out the earliest version of Twitter. In 2011, my guest built the best goal tracking app community the world has ever seen when he co-founded the Lyft app. And then they went on to help 85,000 people start meditating. Today, my guest is founder and CEO of Coach.me. Together with his team, they are reinventing coaching for mass consumption. Now, let's hack Tony Stubblebine. I want to thank today's sponsor, Citrix GoToWebinar. When you are trying to create demand, you need a cost-effective way to reach your target audience and generate qualified leads for your sales team. That's why you should use Citrix GoToWebinar. With GoToWebinar, you can present to hundreds with confidence. Whether you are a startup or a company operating worldwide, GoToWebinar can help you connect, captivate, and convert your target audience. Pick a compelling topic, select your audience, and schedule your event. With automated emails, custom branding, and practice sessions, GoToWebinar makes getting ready easy. When your event is live, keep attendees engaged with interactive polls, live chat, and respond to feedback in real time. Then, once your event is over, you are only a click away from reporting on registration attendance and performance metrics of your event. GoToWebinar enables marketers like you to easily reach your target audience and turn leads into customers. Get started with GoToWebinar today to connect and convert. Visit GoToWebinar.com to start your 30-day free trial. That's GoToWebinar.com.
We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest. Tony, welcome to the show.
John, thank you. It feels like a special day being here.
It is a special day, Tony.
That's right.
All right, this is going to be fun. Let's jump straight into it. Tony, can you tell me, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Oh, yeah, that's an easy one. I believe more than anyone else in tech entrepreneurship, I think, in compounding interest. And so a lot of my career was built on the idea that I was just going to keep working at one thing until I got really, really good at it. And so I this is a mistake I see a lot of other entrepreneurs make, is that they do a lot of jumping around where they're like, well, that didn't work, so I'm going to do something completely unrelated. And maybe it took me a while to figure out like what I would say is my life's work. But now that I have it, I personally spent the last 5 years working on it, and I can see it working. You know, it's like already starting to get this amazing traction, but I think we never would have gone that far if I wasn't willing to put that many years into getting up to speed. And the reason it felt worthwhile to me is because I feel like I'm willing to put 50 years into this problem. I think that, like, basically no other, you know, very few other entrepreneurs think that way, except for maybe someone like Warren Buffett, who is the person I stole that idea from.
What's the problem that you're willing to put 50 years into?
Well, human potential for me is the thing that I just absolutely love. And that's what Coach.me is about. You know, most of what we do is business coaching. How do we make someone an elite performer in a business sense? But in the more general sense, I'm just interested in elite performers. And that idea of compounding interest is something, is an idea I stole from Warren Buffett, who, you know, that's his biography is essentially titled Snowball, on the idea that you roll a snowball down a steep hill and it gathers speed and momentum and gets really big at the end. And I really love that concept of working and on yourself until you get, you know, better and better and better.
Yeah, yeah. And so from a tech sort of basis, like you're in, you mean the idea of compound interest means not so much that it's negative to possibly jump, like realize that one venture's kind of reached its maturity and its end possibly, or a logical conclusion, and then going into the next thing, but making that sort of a jumping off point. Because I believe that's what you did, right? From Lyft app to Coach, right?
Yeah, I think that's a great example. So at some point, so Lyft was actually the second, I guess I've started three companies. So I started one company knowing nothing about what mattered to me. And I just thought, all right, I'm going to work as hard as possible and make sure this doesn't fail. And at the second that it like kind of stopped failing, I had this epiphany. I was like, well, what am I doing? I was building software for conferences and I just had no real native interest in it. And that was that epiphany, like, wait a second, I need to find something I really care about. Then I started a company, Lyft, which was a goal tracking community. It was super popular. It was like app of the year or best new app and on the iPhone side, and had, we got to 1 million users pretty quickly. It didn't really work as a business. But the thing is, because it was in my core area of the interest, the thing where I feel like I would spend 50 years doing it, when it was time to pivot or reboot, I didn't do something unrelated where I couldn't carry everything that I'd learned by doing Lyft. Instead, I did something that was actually pretty related. We started Coach.me using a lot of the Lyft assets to build up online coaching as something that could make coaching accessible to everyone in the world. And we used a ton of what we'd learned about human performance during the Lyft days. And that's where I feel like Coach.me is a much better company than Lyft was, because one of the things that compounded was my own intelligence about this space. Whereas if I'd moved from Lyft to, let's say, a Bitcoin startup, which is something that several of the engineers on the team wanted to do, I think my Bitcoin startup would be equally as bad as Lyft was as a company. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, yeah. And so do you now within you, or do you think it's possible to know that Coach.me is the one that you could take? Or do you think that maybe there might be a logical conclusion to this, which will then be the next platform for the next big thing?
Well, I mean, business, you can never really know what is going to work or what, you know, how things are going to end up. I do feel like no matter what, I'm going to wake up working in this space. You know, tomorrow I'll wake up working in this space in some fashion. So almost by definition, I'll be smarter, having had more experience and having had a chance to test more ideas in the space. But where we are at sort of the early stages of Coach.me, it feels like a great business. We have really clear revenue, really clear way to grow it. It's very clear that, you know, we're providing massive value to our customers, especially on the business side, where we're, you know, probably a 10 or 100x improvement over things that they've tried in corporate training before. And so to me, at this point in time, I'm like really bullish. It feels like a great business. But regardless, if I had to do a third business in this space, you know, obviously it would be even smarter and more informed, having spent, you know, 5 to 10 years working in this area already.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. So let's go back a bit if we can, Tony, because I believe pre-2011 or mid-2011, you were a software engineer at the time.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
So just pre, I guess, entrepreneurial you, but looking back, sometimes going through it, it doesn't make sense. But looking back, we can sometimes figure this out, that there's this time, and possibly that was it in your life, when you realized that either you had this like calling to make this big difference in the world, or you found that you were had just become unemployable and couldn't work for somebody else anymore. So I'd love to know, Tony, where are you looking back now? Where you sort of see yourself, like which side of the fence? And if that was the time that you figured that out?
You know, I think I trained myself to be unemployable. I think I'm unemployable at this point because I would just find it so boring knowing what's possible to do as a founder. You know, it's like you just if you have a vision and you're the founder, you get to make it a reality. And it's almost, you know, working for other people almost feels like that idea of having a vision gets beaten out of you. So the way I experienced it, though, was that I was a great employee and I tried really hard to be a great employee and, you know, got good marks the whole way through. But then I just had this sort of nagging doubt about the work I was producing, that no matter how well received, you know, it was by my boss, it was not, you know, it tended not to actually be used by other people. Right. So if you build something and it's well crafted, but no one uses it, then was it worth building? And that question really just, you know, ate away at me for years as I worked my way through various engineering jobs. And it's, you know, eventually it dawned on me, if I want to do stuff that has a real impact on the world, you know, I should just take responsibility for doing that. And taking responsibility means, you know, being the CEO, being the founder.
Nice. I like that. And so now creating your, or making yourself be unemployable. And you're right, as a founder, you have a vision and you get to see it a reality. But that also means that you, everything comes down to you as the founder. So can you think back now in the last year or a few months, maybe even, has there ever been a morning where you've just woke up, Tony, and been like, I wish this wasn't all riding on me right now? Or, you know, you could just go in and just somebody else will answer all the questions.
I have a really literal experience of that. At one point is we were raising money and it was kind of a difficult raise, but, you know, I'd gotten everyone convinced. I'd gone in and pitched a, you know, whole, you know, sort of in VC, when you pitch the partners, that's when you know you're really going to get a decision. So we'd gotten a term sheet and we were 2 days away from the money being wired and we really needed this money. And right before the money got wired, my co-founder pulled me into a meeting and said, you know, just for personal reasons, he was going to have to bow out of the company. And this is like a terrible thing because it's obvious, like I just pitched, I just got this deal lined up and he's obviously a key part of the company. What am I going to do? And, you know, like, of course, part of me is like, I shouldn't tell them. Like, I should not until the money is wired, because, you know, they can back out essentially all the way up until the time you have that money. And but then, you know, the sort of the high integrity part of me took over and was like, well, I have to have this conversation. So I called one main investor and he was like, he's an entrepreneur. And he's like, actually, I've been really happy every time my co-founders have left, because then I got to do it 100% my way. And he gave me a little pep talk. But then I called the other main investor, the one who I thought was going to be most likely to pull out. And what he said at the end of the conversation was, oh, don't worry, we're still going to wire you the money. We're investing in you anyways. Like almost like literally putting the whole success of the company on my shoulders at that moment. And I just was like really both thankful and incredibly scared in that moment, because, you know, seriously, like how, you know, I couldn't guarantee that we were going to make it happen. And I did. So, yeah, that was hard and emotional. But in practice, when, you know, I've been really lucky to work with amazing teams. And so it hasn't ended up being my responsibility to solve every problem in the company. More, I feel like I'm the thread that keeps the company together. So, like, as we shift and change, you know, I've changed and learned new things, because I'm guaranteeing that I'll be here, I'm basically the person that's guaranteeing that the company will always have a chance to exist.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. And so you said something interesting in there where you wanted to not tell them about it till after you had the money, which most people would think that way initially, at least. Then you said the integrity part of me sort of stepped up. So now when the integrity part of you stepped up and did the right thing and it worked out, does that integrity part always take over now? Like, are you just like, and do you advise people? Because I mean, that's what coach.me is, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a dumb question now, because obviously you're not going to say, no, I tell people to ignore the integrity part of them. But you know what I mean? Doing the right thing. And that's actually, it's true. It probably would have been terrible to not tell the truth, and then they would have found out eventually and not been really happy with you.
Right, right. It is, you know, there's a couple ways to come at integrity. Like, one is it's just a straight up moral issue. But the other way, and I often, when possible, I try to reframe moral issues as also being self-serving. And so I gave you the framing for integrity right at the start. It's like, I'm a huge believer in compounding interest. And so when you have integrity, one of the things that compounds in your life, then you get these one-off opportunities, but they don't stick around. And so what actually made it an easy decision for me is that at least one of those investors, I thought, you know, might be in my career for the rest of my life, that he's someone who was my boss back in 2005. And, you know, we kept in touch, and, you know, I help a little bit with his company, and he helps a lot with my company. And so it was like I could see a short-term gain in hiding this information, but I also knew it didn't fit my long-term goals of you know, having people in my life that I can rely on and call on. So that's how I looked at it, and that's how I tend to frame it for other people as well, is that integrity is a good value, but it's also a great tactic. It's just a great life tactic. And you know, if you ever read the book Good to Great, sort of, you know, one of the framings from that book is hedgehogs and foxes. So foxes are always looking for short-term tricks, and hedgehogs stick their head up and look for the big picture. In the big picture, integrity works. In the short run, integrity is not really that important, but in the big picture, it matters a lot.
Yeah, that's a great way. And yeah, the hedgehog analogy, but I love making it sort of making integrity within your framework sort of self-serving, right?
Yeah.
Because it's funny how we need that, but we kind of do as humans, right?
Well, it's like self-serving. It like, if you can think of it in a self-serving way, it helps you stick to it when you're at your worst.
Exactly. Yeah, that's smart. So you keep going back to this compound interest idea. That's your one thing, like very, very clearly you said. But now every expert, Tony, in business talks about the 80-20 rule. You're supposed to do 20% of the work and you'll get 80% of the results. You're supposed to do what you're good at and delegate the rest. Tony, can you tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
I'm terrible at the structure of that. Maintaining structure is actually how I say it. Like, I am super fascinated in organizational design. And like, when we're trying to debug something that's not working in the process, like, I really like to be involved. It's one of the most fun parts of my job. But when it comes to like making sure a meeting, you know, a repeating meeting is like happens every week and has preparation for it, I'm really bad at that. And I think it's the thing that I most am on the lookout for delegating is the repeating stuff. And some people, you know, really like repeating work because there's a reliable win to it. Like, you know, you're going to get it done. You know how to get it done. And every time it comes up, you know, you get to claim a success. But I've watched my own career and I'm just so bad at it. I can be so good the first time around, and then it all falls apart afterwards.
And so looking back on your career, as you say that, do you think you realized this too late about yourself, or did you kind of realize this really early on?
Too late. This is a coaching phrase that we end up using all the time. And I learned it from one of my coaches who was trying to teach me a pretty important lesson. And the phrase is, the thing that got you there is now the thing that's holding you back. And so this comes up all the time with people who consider themselves great improvisers, is that they build up a story around what makes them good at work, around that improvisation. So they really embrace it, and then become blind to the ways in which it's now blocking their future progression. And so my coach was pointing out to me that because I have like basically, you know, zero fear, zero inertia, and really like to improvise, that's why I started a company. it wasn't hard for me to start a company because I could just jump in and figure it out as I went. But as it got more mature, everyone around me was wanting more structure and more preparation. And so what I considered my strength was in fact holding back the entire company top to bottom.
Wow. The thing that got you there is the thing that's holding you back.
So this coach, he said, you know, when in doubt, when he's looking for some way that he can create an insight for the client, he'll just ask them, tell me why you're successful. And 100% of the time, that story includes the thing that's holding them back currently.
Wow. So is compounding interest holding you back, Tony?
That's a good question. You know, in some ways, you could say that, you know, I turn down opportunities that just don't fit that idea. I mean, always I have these opportunities to join really high growth startups that are guaranteed successes. And, you know, if you can join as an executive and first 50 employees for a company that's going to end up being a $1 or $10 billion company, you end up doing financially really well. So that, I mean, that is a way that is holding me back, but, and I've been aware of that, you know, I've become aware of that over and over again as I see opportunities that I turn down go on to be very big. But, you know, the way that, maybe it's a rationalization, but the way it really works for me is that at the end of the day, the money is a tool to do what I want to do. And I basically chose the thing that I want to do, which is, you know, coach.me in this world of human performance.
Yeah. I love that. And that's such a great follow-up to my one thing question. Everyone's so confident in the one thing that got them to success. Right. Is this thing holding you back now? Wow, I love it. So the compounding interest thing keeps you guided as in, and possibly to a detriment in a financial perspective, as you just said, but let's move to projects. So we know how you decide to not work on projects. But I would love to know, Tony, projects is a loose term, but something new that you guys want to do within CoachMe, how do you determine when a project, whether that's a feature or a new service or a new offering, how do you determine, and is it like an internal process you go through, or do you guys have a written process, but how do you decide when a new project is worth your time, energy, and resources?
That's a great question. I think one of the strengths of the company, maybe this goes back to the improvisational bit, is that we're really good at prototypes. Like, we could get a trial up often within 1 or 2 days, sometimes within 2 weeks. We actually trial the whole line of business around bringing business coaching into companies and doing a whole team at a time, which is actually a big part of what we do now. But I remember when we trialed it, it was an idea that had just popped up inside of a board meeting. And I loved the idea. I interviewed someone about it, recruited coaches for it, created a coaching program around it, and had 3 customers before our next board meeting 2 months later. And I just remember my board was just floored because, you know, they're entrepreneurs and they have so many companies that can't get anything done. And we had completely, like, just created a line of business overnight. But then the thing where I feel like we struggle with is the taking that prototype and maturing it quickly. So, you know, I'd say we prototyped that basically in July, and then it'd probably take us 6 months to figure out what makes, you know, make it really, really strong. And I think that's where we're just lacking the process of saying, okay, that prototype won, and we want to make a big bet, and we want to do a lot of work on it. And that's where sort of the lack of planning, which, you know, we get better at that, but I think still we tend to be under planners, or I tend to be an under planner. That actually makes that process drag on more than it should.
So that's beyond idea to execution sort of stage. That's like the maturity. So, but that's great because it makes, like you said, unlike all the other companies that take a long time to implement an idea, this allows you to kind of decide on a project and run with it.
Right.
And execute.
Right.
Which allows you to tell if it's worth doing, which is better, I think, than spending 6 months like just projecting out and then doing it and then finding out that actually nobody wants this. The market does not want this.
Right. If you had to be bad at one, you'd rather, I think, be bad at the second phase. And, you know, it's not eventually, and when I say bad, I mean, basically, I think we're slower than we should be. The quality is still absolutely there, and we always get there eventually. I just think that we could be a lot faster at it.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. All right, Tony, this has been a lot of fun. I want to wrap up on one final question for you. This idea I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. So since 2011, you quit the whole software engineering game, and you've now kind of done your compound interest from one company to the next, and you have a big, big, big vision. But sometimes, often as entrepreneurs, we tend to always project our successes into the future, meaning that, Tony, you will see yourself as successful in 6 months when you hit this revenue target, or in 9 months when you hit this other metric that you've set. But right before you get there, you're going to set bigger, loftier goals in the future. And no matter what you accomplish, you never see yourself as successful. So I would love right now, Tony, if you could stop, turn around, and look behind you at everything you've accomplished, the wins, the losses, the highs, the lows, and tell me how you feel about your whole entrepreneurial sort of journey up until today.
You gave me a hint that this question was coming, but now that I've heard the full scope of it, I literally did turn around and be like, wait a second, do I like what's back there? One of the things that we learned early on, and this is the Lyft days, is we created a vanity metric essentially that was trying to make an equivalence. So on a per employee basis, what was our impact on people's lives in relation to what maybe a personal coach might do? And from the day we launched, on a per employee basis, every employee in the company was having the same impact that 1,000 personal coaches would have. So I think that's sort of this vanity metric that just made me, every day I wake up and I think, wow, you know, I'm going to change a lot of people's lives today. And, you know, as far as legacy, that's the thing where I felt like, however this company turns out, is going to have been time really well spent. And that's actually one of my hacks for being relatively at peace during the chaos of a company, is that, you know, I started a company that where it was really obvious to see that we were doing good in the world. And so it's not something that I end up questioning. I don't end up thinking a lot about, you know, am I a success or am I a failure? It also helps that, you know, I think in your early 20s, you're trying to, or at least I was trying to establish myself in the world. And, you know, I was able to do that pretty early, where I had a successful career as a programmer. I had written a programming book. I was, starting to manage engineers at startup Odeo, which ended up being Twitter. And so, like, I played a role in big successes and I felt relatively established. And so now, you know, sort of moved into a more mission-driven approach. And so I don't worry that much about how other people perceive me. And I built a company where it's very obvious that we're making a difference in people's lives. And so maybe unlike other entrepreneur friends of mine, I have a high degree of satisfaction with the work to date.
Beautiful answer. Beautiful answer. All right, Tony, we've got to talk about your business in passing. I would love it right now if you could specifically tell the listener where to find out more about your business and then where also to find you.
Yeah, the place to go is just our website, coach.me. You can download our apps from there. But I think the thing that most of your listeners are going to be interested in, because it's really the most transformational thing that we do, is the leadership coaching that we just launched, which is a high-level manager training people how to be a great manager, and especially new managers and our people that have been hiring a lot of our leadership coaches. It's, you know, for coaching, it's probably the cheapest, you know, most, I don't like to say cheap is the wrong word. It's very valuable, but it's the most affordable coaching I've ever seen. It's $250 a month. And it's right there from the website, coach.me. And then if people are interested in me, I think follow me on Twitter. I'm at Tony Stubblebine. And I like to talk about business and startup and human performance stuff and a little bit about NBA basketball.
Nice. Excellent. And Tony also writes at medium.com/@TonyStubblebine. So coach.me and Tony on Twitter. I will link to all those in the show notes. So when you're done writing driving or working out, you can find them there. But Tony, thank you again so much for taking the time to join me today. I really do appreciate it. And please just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is awesome, inspiring to watch.
All right. Thanks, man. John, this was so much fun.
Tony, thank you. That was a lot of fun. So you're out there listening, and I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did, because Tony is a really, really smart guy. He belongs to an interesting part of internet history, even. That, I mean, the beginnings of Twitter and such. I mean, to me, I kind of geek out over that. It's a really cool place to be, and there's only so many people. And it's also very recent. I mean, this isn't, I love it. I love the internet for this and the connection of making, the connections you can make to people and companies and the businesses that you can start today, actually, to even go further with it. And the things you can create from your own office, your own house, and that have the scale, can reach the scale and magnitude of the world, really, and can truly affect people on a global scale. And it's amazing. And so getting to talk to Tony is a lot of fun, because he really does have his hand in that. And the things he tries to do now are on a big scale. He's trying to change the way coaching takes place and bringing it to the mainstream. That's amazing and really, really powerful. And so I really, really enjoyed it. But I had to go back through the conversation, as I always do. And I went through and I found 6 things that Tony said. So I went back and listened to the 6 things. And then upon listening back, I got it down to 3. Then from the 3, I got it down to 2. And then I listened one more time. And that last time I listened, there was this one thing that Tony said. This one thing that I just couldn't get out of my head. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Right. So if you build something and it's well crafted, but no one uses it, then was it worth building? And that question really just, ate away at me for years as I worked my way through various engineering jobs. And eventually it dawned on me, if I want to do stuff that has a real impact on the world, I should just take responsibility for doing that. And taking responsibility means, being the CEO, being the founder.
And that's the hack. Tony, thank you so much for this. 2 really important things here. The first one, I'm not even sure if Tony meant it this way, but I'm going to take it and I'm going to run with it because it's my show. But the idea of if you craft, you build something and you craft it really well, but nobody buys it or nobody hears it. Does it even matter? And this is so very true. And a mindset shift that we have to go through, I think, before we even start making products, before we start building things, before we start writing books, before we start building software, we need to know how we're going to get this product or who we're going to give it to. That's this whole idea and philosophy of building an audience and making a business sort of evolve out of that audience, rather than trying to create something, crafting it really well, focusing so much on your product that you don't think about the user and the person who's actually going to consume this product, to the point where it doesn't matter how well you engineer it, that there might not be anybody for that product. And so it's that whole, it's almost, to me, it's like a digital version of, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's around to hear, it doesn't even make a sound. If you create a product that's so good and you launch it and nobody even cares, does it even exist? Is there a point to it? That metaphor sounded better in my head, but you get it though, right? And so this is something, I'm going through this with my book. People are like, wow, how are you selling so many books? It's like, this doesn't make necessarily my book any better, but I've sold just almost, like, maybe by the time this comes out, 5,000 copies of my book. And I thank every single one of you for buying it, because it's amazing. But that's not necessarily the reason. It's because even the best book in the world, if it's not brought to the right audience or put in front of the right audience in the correct way, will never get read. The best albums in the world, to me at least, are the ones that never seem to get heard. It's created by somebody, in their basement and it never gets out there properly, or it gets heard by a couple thousand people. I do not think, and I'll argue to the death, that I do not think that pop music in, like, I was going to say Taylor Swift. I don't know if that's a good example. I don't even know what she sounds like, but that's not the best music that there is in the world right now, just because it's the most popular. And now I'm totally off on a tangent from what Tony was talking about. But I wanted to make that point because I like how he said that if you craft it really well and nobody does it even help. And then he said, you get that feeling that what you're working on isn't of value and isn't going to change the world. And so I know that feeling. I've had that feeling before when I had a job. And that was many years ago. And that's when I dropped it all and I said, I'm going online. And I figured out this whole online thing because I wanted the scale and the magnitude of being able to impact people beyond my physical reach. And I hope that that's what I get to do with you by being in your ears and going with you to the places that you're going and hopefully inspiring you or educating you or entertaining you in some way to go do the work that matters. But that whole way that you can do that work that matters is what Tony did. And what Tony says at the end is you have to decide to take responsibility and become the founder. There's no other way. You have to take that responsibility. Then if what you build is well-crafted and doesn't get found by the right people, then at least it's your fault. And you're not helpless to the situation. But because I've hopefully hammered it into your head enough, you will not build something and not have people for that thing. You will already know who you're going to sell to. At least you'll know that there's this one perfect ideal customer and you just have to find 1,000 more of them. But that's the way it has to work. And I really, really appreciate it, Tony, that you talked about it in that way. And I hope I didn't veer too far off in my summary of it. Thank you, Tony. That was a lot of fun. All right. Thank you so very much for taking the time to stop by. You know how much I do appreciate it, right? Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. If you want to check out the book, go straight to Amazon.com. Look up Hack the Entrepreneur or go to htebook.com and it'll link you straight through to Amazon. It's like, I think it's probably like $3 right now. It might even be $2. I don't know. But if you haven't grabbed a copy, if you're not one of those 5,000 people, you should. I've heard some great things about it. I'd love you to read it. I think it'll really, it was written for you. It was written to help you do the things you need to do. So yeah, pick up a copy, grab it, and put it into action. That would be the best thing that you could do. All right. Enough of me. Enough of my book. You have a good day. Thank you so much again for taking the time. I do appreciate you. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.